Hey guys, this right here is going to be pharmacology, and I'm still trying to figure out how I want to do pharmacology. And yes, I'm halfway through the course, and I still don't know how I want to upload it. And it's because pharmacology is such a weird subject. It's either you get it or you don't. There is no middle ground with pharmacology. But I'm just going to upload a drug from a class, for instance, like fluoxetine is an SSRI, or metoprolol is a beta blocker. Now, if you need something that is more in depth on a particular drug, then I will let you go and search that out yourself. Like, for instance, metoprolol is a beta blocker, and then labetalol is also a beta blocker, but it is also an alpha blocker as well. So, if you guys need that type of particular stuff for a particular drug, then I will let you go out and find that out yourself. But labetalol is also a beta blocker. So you're looking at the apical pulse for 60 seconds. You have your blood pressure guidelines before you can give it and not give it. So stuff like that. I'm probably just going to keep this intro for the rest of the pharmacology drugs out there. That way you guys can know, like, hey, this is an SSRI. This is what SSRIs do. Or this is an SNRI. This is what SNRIs do. Or this is a TCA. This is what TCAs do. Stuff like that. So, just because you can really get into the weeds of stuff and then have so many drugs on this podcast that you will never be able to find the right one that you need. So it's just going to be a drug from a drug class. And then if you need more information, like the labetalol example, then that will be on you to be a prudent student, nurse, or whatever it is that you are, to find out what you need to know for your particular nursing school exams or your particular state boards. But I'm just going to be uploading a drug from a class and then letting it ride like that. So I hope you guys enjoy. I'm still trying to figure this stuff out. Thank you for listening. Again, if you like the show, like it. If you want to leave a comment, go for it. Leave a review, whatever. But also check out the ACLS stuff. I uploaded it as well. So if you need ACLS for your work or you need a recert, then by all means, the material that is straight from the AHA's ACLS book is on the podcast, and they go over it. And I even broke it down into certain sections like stroke, like ACS, like respiratory failure, and everything else. Okay. So give that a listen. And as other certifications of mine come due, like PALS and TNCC and ABLS and ASLS and whatever, I'll be uploading those materials too. That way, you guys can stop by and listen, and it'll help you out in your practice. But again, this is pharmacology, and this is how I think I'm going to be doing it from now on. So I hope you guys enjoy.
Patients here.
Oh boy, got some blood going.
Yeah, this is blood.
Well, he's wearing it too.
Welcome to the bay. When you get over to the bed, we'll go ahead and give you the story. This is all going to happen super fast. Welcome to the emergency room.
70-year-old female, single driver of a vehicle. Appears that she went off-road into a ditch, rolled over her car onto a trailer, caved in. The top of the vehicle was caved in, and she was hanging out partially from the window.
She's in her left hand. For 45 minutes of CPR, no.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Our goal, as always, is to take these really dense pharmacological sources, you know, the kind of stuff that underpins critical care, and turn them into clear, usable insights.
Exactly.
Today, we're diving deep into fluoxetine. It's one of the cornerstone SSRIs, but it comes with some really unique management challenges. It's a drug you absolutely have to know inside and out.
Indeed. Think of this as your personalized study guide. Fluoxetine, or Prozac as many know it, it sort of anchors the whole SSRI class, but, and this is a key point, its pharmacokinetics make it a total outlier. If you're managing patients on this, you need to understand its specific profile.
And that profile is defined by this, well, this paradox, right?
Yeah.
The mechanism, the actual blocking of serotonin reuptake happens immediately.
Right. Chemically, it's fast.
But the patient doesn't feel better for weeks. And then to complicate things even more, once it's in the system, it stays there longer than pretty much any other drug in its class. We're talking days, not hours.
Exactly. That disconnect, immediate action, delayed effect, and this incredibly long duration, that's the core challenge. Understanding that is key to using it safely.
Okay, so let's unpack that mechanism first. It's an SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. What does that selectivity really mean at the neuron?
Well, at its most basic, fluoxetine acts like a gatekeeper, or maybe a dam is a better analogy. Serotonin, 5-HT, gets released into the synapse, that little gap between nerve cells.
Right.
Fluoxetine specifically blocks the SERT protein. That's the transporter that normally pulls serotonin back into the first neuron for recycling.
So it stops the recycling.
Exactly. By blocking that reuptake, you get more serotonin hanging around in the synapse, immediately boosting the signal.
Wait, immediate boost in serotonin. But then we have that famous delay. Why does it take 4 or 5, sometimes even 6 weeks, for patients to really feel the full benefit? That seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, it does. And this is where we go from simple chemistry to, well, neurobiology. It's probably the most crucial thing to grasp about how these drugs actually work over time. That initial surge of serotonin, it happens mostly near the neuron's cell body, the somatodendritic area.
Okay.
The issue is the neuron has its own brakes. These are called serotonin autoreceptors, often the 5-HT1A type. They sense that sudden flood of serotonin and basically tell the neuron, whoa, too much, slow down.
So they downregulate.
They downregulate or desensitize, exactly. They try to compensate for the drug's effect by reducing the neuron's firing rate and serotonin release.
Mm.
The brain's trying to maintain its balance, its homeostasis.
Ah, okay, so the brain actually fights the drug initially.
Precisely. It takes time. Typically, we're talking 2 to 4 weeks, maybe longer, for these autoreceptors to get tired, to become desensitized enough that they stop putting on the brake so hard.
I see.
Once that braking action lessens, then the neuron can finally increase its overall serotonin release, not just locally, but down at the axon terminal, where you need it for the antidepressant effect. It's this slow, adaptive change in the receptors that explains the therapeutic lag.
That makes so much sense. It explains why we have to tell patients to be patient, not to give up after just a week or two.
Absolutely. Critical patient education point.
Now let's quickly touch on why SSRIs like fluoxetine basically took over from the older tricyclics, the TCAs.
Oh, that's all about side effects and selectivity. Fluoxetine is really good at targeting that SERT protein, the serotonin transporter. But crucially, it barely touches other receptors like histaminergic, muscarinic, or alpha adrenergic receptors.
Which the TCAs hit pretty hard, right?
Oh, yeah. TCAs were notorious for hitting all of those, leading to a whole host of problems.
Like what kind of side effects are we avoiding with fluoxetine compared to those older drugs?
Well, you avoid the heavy sedation from blocking histamine receptors. You avoid the anticholinergic effects, dry mouth, constipation, blurry vision, urinary retention from blocking muscarinic receptors.
Yeah.
And you significantly reduce the risk of orthostatic hypotension, that dizziness when standing up, because you're not blocking the alpha adrenergic receptors nearly as much. Fluoxetine just has a much cleaner profile, better tolerated, much safer, especially cardiovascularly. #TAG #TAD1.2, pharmacokinetics, the stay time, a critical focus.
Okay, let's shift gears to pharmacokinetics. This is really where fluoxetine stands out and where a lot of the safety concerns come in. How does it get into the body? How is it given?
Absorption's pretty straightforward. It's well absorbed from the gut. Food might slow down how quickly it's absorbed, but not the total amount that gets in. So, you know, taking it with or without food isn't usually a major issue.
And the forms.
It comes in standard immediate release capsules, tablets, even a liquid form. Usually dosed once a day, often in the morning, because it can sometimes be a bit activating, cause insomnia for some, or sometimes split dosing, morning and noon.
But there's also that once a week version, right? That's quite different.
Correct. Prozac weekly, the delayed release capsules, that's typically used for maintenance once someone is stable. Big point here. Those capsules must be swallowed whole, no crushing, no opening them. You need that controlled release profile intact.
Right. But regardless of the form, the real clinical story is in how it's metabolized and how long it sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the metabolism. What are these CYP enzymes?
Okay, so fluoxetine is heavily processed by the liver, mainly through the cytochrome P450 enzyme system.
Yeah.
Think of CYP enzymes as the liver's main machinery for breaking down drugs or sometimes activating them.
And for fluoxetine?
The big player is CYP2D6. That does most of the work. But it also involves others like CYPDC9, CYP2C19, and CYP3A4 to some extent.
And this leads us to the half-life. This is the number everyone needs to know for fluoxetine. What are we looking at?
This is the long tail, as you called it. It's yeah. really striking. The parent drug, fluoxetine itself, after you've been taking it for a while, has a half-life of about 4 to 6 days.
4 to 6 days? That's already long.
It is. But wait, there's more. The real issue is its main active metabolite, norfluoxetine. This metabolite is also an SSRI. It's active. And its half-life, it's incredibly long, 8.6 to 9.3 days.
Almost 9 days. Just for the concentration of the active metabolite to drop by half.
Exactly. So norfluoxetine is hanging around in the body, still blocking serotonin reuptake for a very, very long time after the last dose, much longer than any other SSRI.
And that directly leads to, what's the big clinical rule here?
It leads directly to the single most critical safety rule for fluoxetine, the 5-week washout rule.
Okay, spell that out. 5 weeks. Why so long? And washing out before what?
You absolutely must wait 5 full weeks after stopping fluoxetine before starting certain other drugs, specifically monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOIs.
Got it. MAOIs.
That 5-week period is needed to give that super long-lasting norfluoxetine enough time to clear out of the system. If you start an MAOI too soon, while norfluoxetine is still active,
you get serotonin syndrome.
Potentially fatal serotonin syndrome, yes. So if another SSRI might need, say, a 2-week washout before an MAOI, fluoxetine's unique kinetics demand that much longer 5-week period. It's non-negotiable, mandatory for patient safety.
Okay, so we know how it works and crucially how long it sticks around. Now, why do we use it? Fluoxetine actually has quite a broad range of uses, maybe one of the broadest in the class. #, #2.1, established indications. The core mission.
Yeah, it really does. The core mission, you could say, starts with major depressive disorder, MDD. And fluoxetine is a bit special here because it's approved for MDD, not just in adults, but also in adolescents and even kids down to age 8.
That's quite young.
It is. It's also a first-line treatment for obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. Again, approved down into the pediatric population, age 7 and up for OCD.
What other big ones are on the list for adults?
We see it used effectively for panic disorder. And interestingly, it has a specific approval for bulimia nervosa, often at higher doses, actually, than you might use for depression.
Higher doses for bulimia. Interesting.
Yes. And finally, it's indicated for premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD. Sometimes people only take it during the second half of their cycle, the luteal phase, for that #, #2.2, combination therapy.
Fluoxetine isn't always used alone, though. We often see it combined with other meds, especially when depression is tough to treat. The combo with olanzapine is probably the best known.
Yeah.
What's the target there?
Right. The fluoxetine-olanzapine combination, often known by the brand name Symbiax, that's specifically for two pretty serious situations. Depressive episodes that happen in bipolar I disorder.
Bipolar depression.
Exactly. And also for treatment-resistant MDD, major depression that hasn't responded to other treatments. It comes in fixed-dose capsules combining both drugs.
Why the combination? Specifically for bipolar I, why not just use fluoxetine by itself for the depression?
Treating bipolar depression is tricky. Using an antidepressant alone, like fluoxetine, in someone with bipolar I carries a real risk of flipping them into mania or hypomania.
Right, the manic switch.
Exactly. Adding olanzapine, which is an atypical antipsychotic and also has mood stabilizing properties, helps prevent that switch while still treating the depressive symptoms. The fixed doses just make it easier to manage, ranging from, you know, low combos like 5 milligram olanzapine, 20 milligram fluoxetine, up to higher doses. It's about balancing efficacy and that risk of inducing mania. #, #2.3, specialize and experimental uses.
Uh-huh.
Moments for the learner.
Okay, let's touch on some of the maybe less common, more specialized uses, the kind of things that make you go, huh, didn't know it could be used for that.
Sure, there are some interesting ones. One involves the autonomic nervous system. Neurogenic orthostatic hypotension. That's when your blood pressure drops suddenly when you stand up. There are case reports showing that a standard dose, like 20 milligrams a day of fluoxetine, helped reduce or even resolve those symptoms. The thinking is it might boost norepinephrine release, maybe through serotonin's effects in the brainstem.
Fascinating. Connecting a psychiatric drug to blood pressure, what about areas like impulse control or sexual function? We hear about side effects, but sometimes those effects are harnessed therapeutically.
Absolutely. Premature ejaculation is a well-documented example. Fluoxetine can significantly increase the time it takes, the ejaculatory latency.
Right.
Studies in men who've had this issue lifelong, where maybe the latency was only 20 seconds or so, found that 20 milligrams a day pushed the average time up to around 110 seconds.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
It's a 5-fold increase. Just by tweaking central serotonin levels, it really shows how much serotonin is involved in regulating these functions.
It really does. Yeah. What about kids? Beyond MDD and OCD, any other specialized uses?
Yeah, it gets used off-label for various anxiety disorders in children, too. Things like generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, or social phobia. There's evidence showing benefit for GAD in kids as young as 7, often within the first month.
Okay.
We also see it used sometimes for separation anxiety disorder. And interestingly, in individuals with autistic disorder, it's sometimes used to help reduce repetitive behaviors or associated anxiety and depressive symptoms. One trial specifically showed it helped decrease ritualistic behaviors.
Again, pointing to that regulatory role in things like rigidity and impulse control. #TagTagTagTag2.4. Therapeutic effects, measuring success.
Exactly.
So across this really wide range of conditions, how do we actually measure success?
Yeah.
What tells us the drug is working?
Well, fundamentally, it's always about reducing the target symptoms, whatever they may be. But the time frame is absolutely critical, especially for counseling patients.
Right.
Someone with depression might start feeling a bit better, maybe more energy or improved mood within a month or so. But the full therapeutic effect, that often takes longer.
Especially for something like OCD.
Oh, definitely. For highly ingrained ritualistic conditions like OCD, you often need to wait 5 weeks, 6 weeks, maybe even up to 12 weeks at a good dose before you can really say if it's working optimally or not. Telling patients this up front is so important to keep them from stopping too early, thinking it's failed.
All right, let's pivot now firmly into safety. Adverse effects. When we're thinking study guide, high yield, we need to prioritize. What are the absolute top-tier life-threatening risks? Triage level 1.
Okay, priority number 1 has to be the boxed warning about suicidal ideation. This applies to all antidepressants, but it's crucial to remember.
And who's most at risk?
The risk is highest in children, adolescents, and young adults up to age 24. It's particularly elevated during the first few weeks of starting the drug or right after a dose increase.
So what's the immediate number 1 nursing action related to that?
Priority #1 is intense monitoring. The nurse, the patient, and their family or caregivers need to be educated to watch like a hawk for any worsening of depression, any new or increased agitation, irritability, or any emergence of suicidal thoughts or behaviors.
And if they see something?
Report it immediately to the prescriber. It's an urgent situation that might require stopping the drug or changing the plan. It's the top safety alert.
Okay. Second life-threatening risk, often linked to drug combinations.
Serotonin syndrome, SS. We mentioned it with the MAOI interaction, but it can happen with other combos too. It's basically serotonin overload in the nervous system.
And what does that look like clinically? What's the classic triad?
You're looking for 3 key things. Mental status changes, think confusion, agitation, restlessness. Autonomic instability, that's high fever, hyperthermia, fast heart rate, sweating. And neuromuscular abnormalities, muscle rigidity, tremors, and especially clonus, that rhythmic muscle jerking. Myoclonus can also be present.
If you suspect serotonin syndrome, what do you do?
Stop the fluoxetine and any other potential contributing agents immediately. Then it's supportive care cooling for the fever, maybe benzodiazepines for agitation or rigidity. It's a true medical emergency.
Got it. And the third triage one priority, this one hits the heart.
Yes. QT prolongation and the risk of torsade tip points, TDP. Fluoxetine can lengthen the QT interval on an ECG in a dose-dependent way.
Which increases the risk for?
Torsade tip points, a very dangerous type of ventricular tachycardia. It can degenerate quickly into ventricular fibrillation and cardiac arrest.
Okay, so nursing action, what do we monitor?
ECG monitoring is key, especially at baseline, after dose increases, or if you're adding other drugs that also prolong the QT interval. And keep an eye on electrolytes, low potassium or low magnesium drastically increase the risk of TDP.
Okay, moving down a level to triage 2. These are still serious, need urgent attention, but maybe not immediately fatal like the first 3. Let's start with the other boxed warning specific to kids.
Right, that's the risk of decreased weight gain and growth inhibition in children and adolescents taking fluoxetine. The mechanism isn't perfectly clear, but it's a known potential issue.
So, nursing action.
Regular monitoring. You need to track height and weight periodically, plot them on growth charts. If you see a significant slowing or deviation, that needs attention.
Okay, next triage 2 issue. Bleeding risks. We know SSRIs can affect platelets. What does that look like clinically?
It can range from mild things like easy bruising ecchymosis or nosebleeds, epistaxis, but it can also contribute to more serious problems like upper GI bleeding, you know, ulcers bleeding. Rarely you can see things like TTP, thrombocytopenic purpura.
So the nursing focus here.
Patient education is huge. Tell them to watch for signs like black, tarry stools, or vomit that looks like coffee grounds. And stress extreme caution if they're taking any other medications that affect bleeding aspirin, NSAIDs, anticoagulants like warfarin. Ongoing vigilance is needed.
Got it. And the second triage 2 complication involves fluids and electrolytes.
Yes, this is hyponatremia, low sodium levels, and the underlying cause is often SIEDH, the syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic hormone secretion.
Can you break down SIEDH simply?
Sure. Basically, the body holds onto too much water inappropriately. This dilutes the sodium in your blood, leading to hyponatremia. It's more common in older adults or people who are dehydrated or taking diuretics already.
And if hyponatremia develops, what are the signs and what's the action?
Signs can be subtle at first: headache, confusion, nausea, muscle weakness. But severe hyponatremia can cause seizures, coma. So nursing action. Monitor sodium levels, especially if risk factors are present. Watch fluid status. If someone becomes symptomatically hyponatremic, the fluoxetine might need to be held or stopped, and the low sodium needs correction.
All right, finally, triage 3. These are the common side effects. Usually not dangerous, but they definitely affect whether people stick with the medication.
Yeah, these are the ones you hear about most often. Usually CNS or GI stuff, often hitting 10% or more of patients early on. Think insomnia, nausea, headache, diarrhea, maybe drowsiness, anxiety, or tremor.
Do they usually get better?
Often, yes. Many of these tend to improve over the first few weeks as the body adjusts. So a lot of this is about patient education and reassurance up front.
Okay. What about the one that's maybe most likely to make someone want to stop long term?
That would definitely be sexual dysfunction. It's common, though maybe underreported in trials. Figures often say 1 to 7%, but clinical experience suggests it's probably higher.
And what does that include?
Decreased libido, difficulty achieving orgasm or delayed orgasm, erectile dysfunction in men, ejaculation problems. It can really impact quality of life.
So the key here is?
Open communication. Let patients know this is a possible side effect. It's the drug, not them. And discuss strategies, maybe dose adjustment, maybe adding another medication, maybe eventually switching. But acknowledging it is crucial for adherence.
Right. And other common ones. Dizziness, dry mouth.
Yep. Dizziness, sometimes yawning, and xerostomia, dry mouth, is pretty common too. That can affect dental health, so suggest sugar-free gum or sips of water. But generally, these fall into routine management and patient teaching. Triage 3.
Okay, this section is critical. Drug interactions. This is where fluoxetine's long half-life and its effects on liver enzymes can cause major problems. Let's start with the absolute no-goes. What can you absolutely not combine with fluoxetine? #tag 4.1, absolute contraindications.
Top of the list, building on what we said earlier, MAOIs. That includes drugs like phenylzine, tranexamic, isocarboxazid, selegiline. Also, the antibiotic lanazolid and IV methylene blue, they both have MAOI properties.
And the rule here is driven by that long half-life.
Absolutely. That strict 5-week washout after stopping fluoxetine before starting any of these is mandatory. Risk of fatal serotonin syndrome otherwise.
Okay. Beyond MAOIs, any other specific antidepressants or classes to avoid just due to additive effects?
Yeah, it generally doesn't make sense to combine fluoxetine with other strong serotonergic antidepressants. Avoid other SSRIs like citalopram or escitalopram, or SNRIs like venlafaxine or duloxetine. The risk of serotonin syndrome goes up, plus potential for additive QT prolongation without much added benefit usually.
And specific non-antidepressants contraindicated due to heart risks?
Yes. Avoid drugs that significantly prolong the QT interval and carry a high risk of TDP on their own. Key examples would be the antiarrhythmic dronedarone, the antipsychotic pimazide, maybe thioridazine too. Combining them with fluoxetine is just too risky for inducing a fatal arrhythmia. #tag 4.2, major interaction categories, CYP inhibition consequences.
Okay, now let's get into the mechanism behind many of fluoxetine's interactions, its role as a liver enzyme inhibitor. Remind us which CYPs it affects.
Right. Fluoxetine is a real powerhouse inhibitor here. It is a strong inhibitor of CYP2D6. It's also a potent inhibitor of CYP2C19. And remember that long-lasting metabolite, norfluoxetine. It's a moderate inhibitor of CYP3A4.
Wow. 2D6, 2C19, and 3A4. That covers a huge number of other drugs.
It really does. This is why fluoxetine can wreak havoc in patients on multiple medications.
Let's focus on that strong CYP2D6 inhibition first. One major consequence is efficacy loss. Explain the codeine and tramadol problem.
Okay, this is a classic pro-drug issue. Codeine and tramadol, as you take them, aren't actually very good painkillers. They need the CYP2D6 enzyme to convert them into their active forms. morphine in the case of codeine, or a metabolite called M1 for tramadol.
Right. They need activation.
Exactly. But if fluoxetine is strongly inhibiting CYP2D6, that conversion gets blocked. The activation doesn't happen effectively.
So the patient takes their pain pill and gets little or no pain relief.
Precisely. They might as well be taking a placebo. And if they're dependent on it, they could even experience withdrawal symptoms.
So nursing action.
Always check if your patient on fluoxetine is prescribed codeine or tramadol. Monitor closely for lack of pain control. You likely need to advocate for switching to an analgesic that doesn't rely on CYP2D6 for activation, something like hydromorphone, oxymorphone, or morphine itself.
Okay, so that's efficacy loss. What about the flip side? CYP2D6 inhibition causing toxicity risk. What happens with antipsychotics metabolized by 2D6?
Here, the antipsychotic drug is active, and CYP2D6 is responsible for breaking it down and clearing it from the body. If fluoxetine blocks that breakdown pathway,
the antipsychotic levels build up.
They can build up to potentially toxic levels. This is a major issue for drugs like aripiprazole, Abilify, Risperidone, Risperidol, and Iloperidone, Fanapt, among others. For aripiprazole, for instance, the official recommendation is to cut the dose in half if given with a strong 2D6 inhibitor like fluoxetine.
And what kind of toxicity are we watching for if those levels get too high?
You're looking for increased side effects of the antipsychotic. That could mean excessive sedation, dizziness, or orthostatic hypotension, more pronounced QT prolongation, and importantly, worsening extrapyramidal symptoms, things like stiffness, tremors, restlessness, akathisia, or even acute muscle spasms, dystonia.
Okay, requires immediate dose adjustment. Now let's loop back to bleeding amplification. How does fluoxetine interact specifically with anticoagulants like warfarin?
This is a double whammy. First, as we said, fluoxetine itself increases bleeding risk, probably by about 3.6-fold for upper GI bleeds, just by affecting platelet function.
Okay.
Then you add warfarin. Fluoxetine might also inhibit CYP2C9, which metabolizes warfarin, potentially increasing warfarin levels. So you have increased drug levels plus the direct effect on platelets, compounding the risk.
So critical monitoring needed.
Absolutely critical. For patients on warfarin, you need frequent INR monitoring, especially when starting or stopping fluoxetine, and likely dose adjustments for the warfarin. And for all patients, monitor closely for any signs of bleeding, bruising, petechia, GI bleeding.
What about clopidogrel, Plavix?
Yeah.
That relies on CYP2T19, which fluoxetine also inhibits.
Yes, that's another tricky one. Clopidogrel is also a prodrug. It needs CYP2C19 to be activated into its antiplatelet form. Fluoxetine potently inhibits 2C19.
So it could make Plavix less effective.
Exactly. It could reduce clopidogrel's ability to prevent clots, potentially increasing the risk of heart attack or stroke in patients who need it. So you have this awful combination. Reduced antiplatelet benefit from clopidogrel, but still increased general bleeding risk from fluoxetine's effect on platelets. It's a combination best avoided if possible.
Makes sense. And one last quick mention, triptans, like sumatriptan, used for migraines.
Right. Triptans are also serotonergic. Combining them with fluoxetine or any SSRI, SNRI, theoretically increases the risk of serotonin syndrome. It's not an absolute contraindication usually, but it warrants caution. Patients need to know the symptoms of SS and seek help if they occur.
Okay, let's boil this all down. If you're prepping for an exam or just need the absolute must-knows, what are the top 5 high-yield points for fluoxetine?
All right, number 1 has to be the pharmacokinetic rule, the 5-week rule.
Right. That super long half-life of the active metabolite, norfluoxetine, 8-9 days, means you need a mandatory 5-week washout after stopping fluoxetine before you can safely start an MAOI or related drug like linezolid. Mm. Prevents fatal serotonin syndrome.
Perfect. Number 2. The boxed warnings.
2 key ones here. First, suicidal ideation, especially in patients 24 and under. Highest risk early on or after dose changes. Requires priority monitoring. Second, growth inhibition in kids needing regular height and weight checks.
Excellent. Number 3, CYP2D6 inhibition consequences.
Fluoxetine is a strong CYP2D6 inhibitor. This causes two opposite problems. Toxicity risk for drugs broken down by 2D6, like aripiprazole, needs dose cut. And efficacy loss for prodrugs activated by 2D6, like codeine and tramadol, need to be avoided.
Spot on. Number 4, the serotonin syndrome triad.
Remember the key signs. Hyperthermia, fever, neuromuscular abnormalities, rigidity, myoclonus, hyperreflexia, and mental status changes, confusion, agitation, often triggered by adding another serotonergic agent, triptan, some opioids, other antidepressants. Immediate discontinuation is key.
Great. And finally, number 5, severe bleeding risk.
Fluoxetine messes with platelets, increasing baseline bleeding risk, especially upper GI. This risk skyrockets when combined with NSAIDs, aspirin, anticoagulants, warfarin, or antiplatelets, clopidogrel, requires vigilant monitoring for bleeds and INR checks for warfarin. Hashtag tag outro.
You know, after going through all this, it really strikes me how much the management of fluoxetine is dictated almost entirely by its unique pharmacokinetics. It takes weeks to fully work, but then takes over a month to fully leave the system.
That really is the perfect summary. And it leads to an interesting point about discontinuation. Because of that very slow elimination, that long half-life, fluoxetine often causes less severe withdrawal symptoms compared to short-acting SSRIs like paroxetine that sort of tapers itself off.
Ah, that makes sense.
But that same long half-life creates that huge 5-week window of risk for interactions after stopping. Which brings us to our final thought for you, the listener. Something to chew on. Imagine you're advising a clinician. They have a patient who's been on fluoxetine long-term, and they want to switch them to a different class of medication, maybe something with MAOI properties or significant interaction potential. How does knowing that fundamental fact, the 8 to 9 day half-life of norfluoxetine, completely dictate how you plan that entire switch?
Yeah, think about that. It shifts the focus entirely. You're not just managing potential withdrawal symptoms. You are primarily managing a 5-week pharmacokinetic risk window. The timeline isn't driven by how the patient feels day to day after stopping. It's driven purely by the calculated clearance time of that active metabolite. The entire safety plan, the whole transition schedule, has to be built around ensuring norfluoxetine is gone before the new, potentially interacting drug is started. It's a perfect real-world example of why understanding pharmacokinetics isn't just academic. It's absolutely vital for preventing serious, even fatal harm.